The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning. How are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement. I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie, on the Radio Kerry app or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. It's a bit dark this morning and there's a bit of rain on the way. But like Eamon Kelly said, country people don't mind the rain. It never melted anyone. We have a very busy programme and a very special programme for you this morning because it is presented by Transition Your Students from around the county in association with Learning Waves and Commissioon the Man. All this week we ran a radio course in Radio Kerry with these students and today's programme is produced by them. And among the various items we're going to be discussing this morning, we'll hear about the history of Halloween, the effect invasive species of hornet could have on bees here, the Kerry FC success story this year, discussing antisocial behaviour among youths and the prevention of youth crime, and we'll be hearing from new and upcoming Listowel band, and Mary Jo Curran on her footballing career and the changes that have taken place in ladies football and in football in general. If you want to get in touch with the programme, you can get in touch with us. Dervis, take your calls 066 712 3666. You can text WhatsApp 083 300 3300. And now I'm going to hand you over to Cathal Carr.
Cathal from Mercy Mount Talk. I'm also joined by fellow TY students.
I'm Leisha and I'm from Mercy Mount Talk.
Hi, my name's Hannah and I'm from Castle Island Community College.
I'm Jennifer and I'm from St Bridget Secondary School, Killarney.
Today in studio we are joined by Tom Dillon, who's a local historian in Listowel, who will be telling us about the history and facts of Halloween. Thanks, Tom, for joining us in the studio this morning.
No bother, good morning. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Good morning.
So, Tom, could you first tell us about the origin of Halloween?
Oh, that's a good question. So Halloween as a festival is like thousands and thousands of years old, and it goes way, way back to Celtic times, even before Christianity ever came to Ireland, and you had the old Celtic festival of Samhain. You heard of that you'd often hear Halloween call that now, and the way it's actually been marketed at the moment as events coming up this Halloween in different towns around Kerry, and it's all marketed around Samhain. So that's the old Celtic word for it. And the natural year is divided into kind of in half, really, when you think about the winter solstice and the summer solstice. At the winter time, around December time, you have the darknesses is getting a lot longer in the night time, and the light is kind of getting less, the days are less brighter, and that was kind of when the Celtic festival of Samhain was held. And at that time people used to have their cattle up in the highlands during the summer, and they'd be bringing them back to their homesteads at that time. So they used to have feasts at that time around the 1st of November. That was the date of Samhain. And then later on, then when Christianity came in, there was a day which was specifically set aside to commemorate all the saints. So there was too many saints to be commemorated every day of the year. So they decided they'd pick one day. And that date was originally set around for May 13th. And then way, way back in the 800s, the Pope actually moved the date to the 1st of November, and it became known as All Hallows Day. So the word hallow comes from the word holy. And that's then where we get Halloween from, because the evening before All Hallows Day was All Hallows Eve. And eventually All Hallows Eve, then the word came to be changed to Halloween. So that's a very good question. So it goes back a very, very long time. And then there was lots of other names as well by which Halloween was known over the time, over the years. Like you had Iha Hauna, you'd all know that one because that's the one we're taught at school. You had November Eve, Pooka Night, Bonfire Night as well, because that's the night everyone has bonfires like. So that'd be some of the days. And there was one other Irish word as well which was very interesting for us, Ihanna Hámnisha, which means the night of mischief, and that ties in with trick-or-treating and all those things. So
yeah, that's really interesting. Thanks, Tom. Regarding Halloween traditions, is there any specific ones you had growing up or would you like to see revived?
It's interesting the way Halloween is kind of growing every year more and more, and you'd see more decorations. Back in my time, what age are you? 15-ish?
Yeah, 16.
Yeah, so like, I'm 25 years maybe around that older than you. That wasn't as much back in my time, like, and Halloween costumes consisted of a black bin liner bag and you'd have to cut a hole for your head and two hens out of it, and that was your Halloween costume, and you'd have a mask. But like, Halloween costumes are very a lot better now, like, you know. So but I suppose like Halloween was always a night where there was lots of games played, and like there's an interesting website called Dukas.ie, right? And that's the website of the Irish Folklore Commission records are on that. And back in the 1930s, they asked the school children at that time to go around and talk to their elderly neighbours and their elderly relatives, and they wrote down what they told them. And one of the things they would have asked them would have been about like customs associated with Halloween. And they're very interesting to read because they talk about things like having the barn brack. Like, and we can still get that in the shops, like. So they'd make the cake and they'd put so many things into it. Like, if you had a pea in it, it would mean you would be poor. If you found, they'd put a coin into it, and if you found it, it would mean you'd be wealthy. If you got a holy medal, it meant you were going to be a nun or a priest. And if you got a ring, then everyone knows that one, you're going to get married, like. So that was within the year. So that was one of the things. And then there was lots of other games as well played. And a lot of them used apples, and of course, like, apples are, you'd be picking them off the trees this time of year as well. So there was one of them, if you wanted to find out who you were going to marry, if you peeled all the skin off the apple without breaking it, right, and then you threw it over your shoulder, when it would land on the floor, it would take the shape of initials, and that would give you the initials then of the person you were going to get married to or fall in love with. So that was one of them. And then the other one was Snap Apple. Have you played Snap Apple? Do you know, with the card,
yes,
hanging on it?
Yes.
Yeah. And they said if you... This is all written down that time in the 1930s by the school children. They said if you got a bite out of the apple the first time, it would mean that you would find love very quickly. And the more bites it would take you to get a bite out of the apple... The longer it would take you to find someone to get married to. So that was the story. And it was the same then with the bobbing for apples, you know, with, they'd put the apples into a barrel of water and you'd have to try and bite the apple out, or sometimes there might be a bit of a coin even thrown in. But there was a couple of very funny ones as well. If you went out in Halloween and you pulled up a cabbage from the garden, and if the stalk of the cabbage was long, it would mean that your marriage partner would be tall, and if it was short, if it was a short stump on it, he would be small. And then if there was a lot of earth stuck to the roots, it would mean you'd marry a wealthy person, and if there was not a lot of earth stuck to the roots, they would be poor. So there's all those kind of stories. They're very funny, like. And that's where people amused themselves. Like, people would gather in each other's houses that time, and they'd tell stories, tell ghost stories, obviously, because especially with the night that it was. But they would play all these games. So that was all a big part of how Halloween was observed years ago. Like, so yeah.
Is there a reason that people dress up for Halloween, or would you say people just do it for fun, or is there something more behind it?
Yeah, we used to do it for fun when it would come in, when we were young, and we would go trick-or-treating around to a few of the neighbours' houses. It wasn't a big thing that time, but I suppose it's kind of driven more now by like marketing. Halloween is a big, huge thing. And Halloween as a tradition was taken across to America by Irish people that immigrated, particularly after the famine, and it kind of changed over there then. And now, like that time, you know, we carve pumpkins now. So originally it was turnips people carved, and that would have been what our grandparents and great grandparents would have been carving, were turnips for Halloween. And in America then, you see, they couldn't get turnips, so they had pumpkins. And pumpkins are an awful lot easier to carve anyway. If you try carving turnips, it's a lot more difficult. So pumpkins are a lot easier. And now we see we have pumpkins here. So it's kind of growing all the time. And you can buy pumpkins in the supermarkets. You could even go on out to the pumpkin farms, like, which is kind of a pretty modern thing again, that they're growing them, and you can have the whole experience of going to the pumpkin farm and picking out your pumpkin and you know, bringing it home with you and carving it. And the original story about that was that fire was a big part of how Halloween was observed, and people would have the bonfires, you know, and there were community bonfires, and people would let the fires in their homes die out that night. And then when they'd be coming home from the community bonfire, they'd bring an ember from the fire with them inside in the turnip that was hollowed out, and then they would use that to relight the fire in their own house. So that's where that custom of carving the turnips came from. Then they'd put scary faces on them as well. But the reason the bonfires were lit was to frighten away the spirits and the supernatural beings that would be abroad on Halloween night. And the story was that the veil between, say, the world of the living and the world of the dead would be at its thinnest that on that night, and that the dead would come back and they could visit you. So people used to leave the fire on at night time. They'd have a seat by the fire for the souls of people that would belong to them would come back, and they'd have a conversation with them. And that was seen as a great blessing for the house for the year ahead. But it wouldn't only be the good people that would come back. It could be people that you had wronged could come back as well, and they'd come looking for you. And that's why people used to dress up then on Halloween night and cover their faces, because you could encounter a spirit of someone you didn't want to meet. So that's where that came from. So we used to do it for fun, but there was an old reason for us going away back, that people actually did it for a purpose. Like, so that they're all good questions.
Actually, do you find now that like Halloween has been kind of Americanized, like through, because I know like, you know, shops and the pumpkins, like you were saying.
Yeah.
Like, what are your opinions on it?
Yeah, it has been. It has been. And I suppose it's probably a nice thing in a way, because I mean, it's coming into the run-up to Christmas, but it's something that's very, very old and goes way, way back in our Irish heritage. And it's nice to see it not dying out, that it's kind of been marketed and it's becoming part. Like, we used to always look forward to bonfire night when we were small. And then there was a whole period of years, like in recent times, that we've had no bonfire in my locality. And you'd miss it, because it was kind of an occasion when all the neighbours would gather and they'd be chatting. And it was nice that way. And people would remember it. It would be just a standout memory in of your life, like when you'd be thinking back on things. So I think it's nice, like, you know, we're responsibly having fires now, like, as well, because you know, they have to be looked after as well, of course, like. And I suppose, yeah, it is. It is definitely becoming more marketed in terms of supermarkets and everything else. Like, but I mean, that's good, and it's good, probably good for tourism as well, because Ireland has kind of been marketed now in recent times as the home of Halloween, which it is. And like, if that's going to bring tourists into the country around that time of year, then it's great. Like, you know, it's great for everyone, it's great for businesses and communities as well. Like, so. Yeah, good question as well, yeah.
That's very interesting, Tom, and I just want to say thank you for taking the time to speak to us today. We really enjoyed discussing Halloween with you, and we hope that some of the listeners at home learned something new this morning about this holiday celebrated worldwide, but as we learned today, originated here in Ireland, so thank you.
Thanks,
Lily. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, that is fascinating. And all this week, students did Vox Pops, and we learned during the week that Vox Pop is Latin for voice of the population, where we get your opinion. And in keeping with the theme of Halloween, Hannah, you did a Vox Pop?
Yes, we did. Earlier this week, we got the chance to interview people on the streets of Kerry about their Halloween traditions. So these are some of the responses we got.
Just running around, knocking people's doors and running, you know. I mean, it's a long time since I was growing up, so yeah, that would have been the one. People don't really do it now, you know, so it's but that is the one.
I lived in a very rural area, so all the kids in the village would come together and we'd go very innocent, but on this big long walk, and there was a hill at the end of the village called Hangman's Hill, and we all went up there and told ghost stories.
Lovely, that's so nice. Lovely. That's a great
memory. I suppose my generation as well did fun things, like they took people's gate off and hung it on a tree, but you couldn't do that kind of thing nowadays, whereas you could back along.
Yeah. Well, not the ones that I would have participated in when I was young. I would never have heard of trick-or-treating until I came to live in Tralee in the 1980s. And when I was young, what we used to do is snap apple, hang the apple from the ceiling and try and bite that.
Just dressing up with...
Dressing up with...
Ellen
Roper
used to...
Cat suit
or something else.
Yeah, you'd wear a cat suit and different things like that. And really, it was just a bowl. You've heard that from everybody.
Yeah.
Apple.
Yeah.
Simple.
What's it called? Eat the apple.
Oh yeah,
the apple hanging up, and you put your face into the water for the coins. That was another one, and we'd be all excited about finding the ring in the bear
break.
Yeah.
Do you have any Halloween traditions in your household?
Yeah, I come from Stockholm, Sweden.
Hello.
This is my best friend. Yeah. Yeah, I come from Stockholm, Sweden, and me and my sons, Joel and Juna, and their friend Hampus and Sebastian, we always celebrate Halloween with my godsons, Maximilian and Alexander, and they are from Moscow. So we hide and seek things up in a little forest, things like Halloween and pumpkins and everything. A little ghost, and we say, hello, happy Halloween. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We used to, well, long time ago now, but we used to build bonfires because we live out by our farm. So we used to get like a load of wood from all the neighbours and build a bonfire. And other than that, just play games. You know, the, what are they called? The
apple bobbin.
Apple bobbin, that's it. Yeah, so they would be kind of my traditions. Do you have any?
Same as yours, actually.
Yeah.
I suppose having the ring in the barn brack would have been a great tradition, and all the other, the stick and the pea and all the symbolisms associated with that. Yeah. And I suppose the pumpkin, mm-hmm. carving the pumpkin, which would is very significant at Halloween because it's harvest, the end of the harvest time, and it shows the pumpkin is so full and rich and plentiful and that. So it's a tradition as well that I really like.
Yeah, amazing to hear all the different traditions around Halloween. Did you partake in any traditions, any games? Let us know. 066-712-3666. You can text WhatsApp 083-300-3300. We're going to take a break and we'll have more from our TY students after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shop and Seafood Bar, the Mall Tralee. Treat yourself to the freshest takeaway fish and chips today, right in the heart of Tralee.
Yes, indeed, that's what you're listening to. And all this week, TY students, transition your students from around the county in association with Learning Waves in Commissioner Man. We're in with us learning all about radio, and today's programme is produced entirely by them. And now we're switching the tack to sports, and I'm going to hand you over now to Michael, Tig and Shay, and first Michael.
Good morning, listeners. My name is Michael O'Brien, and this morning I'm joined by my fellow TY students. And on the line this morning, we have Kerry FC press officer Ivan Hurley. Good morning, Ivan.
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Good. The first question we have for you is, do you think it's been a successful season for Kerry FC?
Yeah, I think it's been a very successful season, Michael. Obviously, just concluded last night in Bray, 45 games later since we started on the 14th of January this year. I suppose we had our historic cup run that I think the whole county knows about, the four games along to the semi-final, which was covered on national television a couple of weeks ago. We've had a record points total this year and our highest place in the league in our first three seasons. So, very successful season. I think onwards and upwards now to next February when the new season starts again.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And if you could relive one moment from the past season, Ivan, what would it be?
I suppose there's so many, Michael. I think the big one really was there has been a few. I suppose the Sligo Rovers game in the quarter final of the cup. I think everybody thought we were dead and buried. I think even our own supporters were thinking it was all over, 3-0. But somehow the players dug in and managed to force extra time at 3-3. And then that moment when we got the winner in extra time, I think that'll forever be in my memory somehow for as long as I live. Anyway, I think most of the supporters as well. So I think it'd be rude not to say that the game against Sligo Rovers.
Okay, thank you, Ivan. What does your role in Kerry FC entail?
I suppose I have two key roles. Firstly, as I was introduced, as the media and press officer. So everything involving that, from doing things like this today with yourselves, which is fantastic, and then scheduling for Colin Healy, the first team manager, to do all his press and media duties along with the players throughout the season. Also run the social media accounts in throughout the year, be it on match day and in between matches as well, so all the social media content. And then my second role with the club is that I'm the first team kit man as well, so from the very start of the season up to last night, you're organising the team's training gear, the match gear, the jerseys, the pre-match meals, the snacks for during the game, after the game, and everything in between. So two probably key roles within the club, but I absolutely love it. I'm a busy man, but I really enjoy it.
And who do you think has been Kerry FC's player of the season?
I suppose there's been so many standout performers throughout the year, and at certain times you could probably look at different players throughout the season, but I suppose the most consistent player really throughout has been Ronan Tehan in midfield. He's been a stalwart really for us over the last three seasons. He was the second man to reach 100 appearances for Kerry FC, and in just 3 years, that's such a short time to do so. So I think, you know, as someone who's you know, come in since the very start and has been working away throughout the couple of seasons. I think Ronan Sheehan this year really shone, you know, brightest throughout, and I think the most consistent player really throughout the year. As I said, I think there's, you know, so many different players that have been you know, in and out and have a good couple of games and maybe dipped off for a while, but I think Ronan T has been consistent throughout, and great to be able to say it's a Kerry man doing it for Kerry FC as well. So I think Ronan T would be the fairest answer.
What do you enjoy most about your role with Kerry FC?
What to enjoy most? I think, to be fair, like as a team, when we win, it's always you know, fantastic. And those nights when you come away with 3 points, be it at home or be it away up the country, I think, you know, you get the most enjoyment out of that, and seeing kind of the smiles of the on the supporters' faces. I think, you know, you're doing it all for them, and you know, I'm not performing on the pitch like the players are, but I think we can all take wins together. So I think, you know, I think it's when the team wins and you see the smiles and the supporters' faces, I think that's job done in my eyes and kind of a big box tick. So I think, you know, I get the most enjoyment out of that. I enjoy kind of, you know, most aspects of it. There's obviously tough days, which comes with every sort of work life. No matter what you get into in life, there's always going to be tough days in work. But, you know, I think I enjoy the job mostly. There's been very few bad days, really. It's been all kind of good days and on the up. But I think, you know, the big answer there is if we get a win and, you know, you can really see the smiles on everyone's faces, I think that's the bit I enjoy most when they do come.
What are the aspirations for next season?
Yeah, I suppose it's time now to reflect over the winter and kind of look into what we're going to be doing next year. Obviously, we've been kind of building over the last 3 years, and every year there's kind of been a new target set and reached. I suppose you're always looking to better last season's performance. And as I said earlier, I think we've done that this year with between the cup run and between the highest league finish and the highest points total. So you're looking just to build on that again next year. And, you know, I think if you look at the table now at the end of the season, then there's maybe a couple of games where we were kind of saying maybe we could have got a better result there, and all of a sudden we'd have probably been in the playoff picture and we could be still playing next week. So I suppose that's probably the next one you're kind of saying, if we can get into a playoff place and up the league table. I think, you know, the next best thing you can do in the FAI Cup will be get to the final, which is always very difficult as well, because you're up against some top talents in the Premier Division. But it's going to be Colin Healy's first full year next year, so it'll be interesting to see what he's able to do in maybe the transfer market and what players he can attract to come to Kerry. And then it's all about how you start next season. Then the first 9 games is always crucial to see whereabouts you are going to the rest of the season. So I think everyone will have their own aspirations. I think the supporters will have it. I think Gus's staff will have it. And obviously then the management and the players. So look, I think building on this year again and kind of getting up that league table is probably the most crucial. And it'd be great if we were here this time next year looking at a playoff place.
Excellent. Ivan Hurley, Kerry FC media officer, and wears so many more hats, including here on Radio Kerry. Thanks a million for coming on and telling us all about the successful year Kerry FC have had.
A pleasure, Joe, and thanks very much to your TY students as well. They've been great.
Yeah, well done there to Shea, Tig, and Michael, who took that excellent interview. We'll take a break with them more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's The Mad Monk in Killarney, serving the finest seafood in a cosy, modern atmosphere. Book your special experience today at seafoodbar.ie.
Get in touch with us, 066-712-3666. You can text WhatsApp 083-300-3300. The TY students are with us all week, and they've produced today's programme in association with Learning Waves and Commission the Man. And now I'm going to hand you over to Luke Mangan and Leisha O'Sullivan, who are going to interview a living Gaelic football legend.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Luke.
And my name's Leisha.
And today we have one of Kerry's most well-known sports stars. She has won 10 All-Irelands with Kerry and 11 All-Stars awards in a playing career that went from minor in 1976 to getting her last senior medal in 1993. She was also honoured in the GAA Hall of Fame in 2013. This is Kerry and Beaufort's Mary Jo Curran. Good morning, Mary. How are you?
Morning, Luke. I'm good, thank you.
Who was your toughest opponent across your career?
Toughest opponent, I would have to say Annette Walsh. She was one of the greatest midfielders, if not the greatest midfielder that ever played ladies football. Just a brilliant fielder and a team player. And if you were in a fight, Annette is the one you'd want to have by your side. So I'd say Annette Walsh. She played for Castle Island and midfield for Kerry.
In your opinion, how has the game of ladies football and football in general changed since you retired?
I suppose it has changed on and off the field. Maybe on the field, the emphasis now is much more on strength and conditioning and fitness. And there's a lot of pre-season work going into preparation. And off the field, I think we really enjoyed football after our games. We'd always have time to meet, maybe half an hour, to mix with the opposing team, say the visiting team. The home team would provide some refreshments for the visiting team, and you'd have a half an hour to have a chat with them. And through that, we made great friends in all the other counties. That's not so much present anymore because everything is so professional. So I think it has changed, as I say, both on the field, with the emphasis now on strength and conditioning. And I would just hope that the skills won't be compromised, that that people will get the balance right between working on the skills and the strength and conditioning. But they are the biggest changes since I retired.
Who was your favourite opposing player or team to play against?
My favourite team... our toughest matches were always against Waterford in, say, at senior championship level for inter-county. They were the team that knocked us off our perch, really, when we had won a few All-Irelands there. They were the team that beat us, and we were, I suppose, we were great. We were very good friends with them. We were delighted they went on to win the All-Ireland those years. So it would be the Waterford team, and then at club level, I'd have to say Castle Island. Castle Island had won All-Ireland Club Championships. They were a super team, coached by Mick Fitzgerald, and they had backboned by the girls from Ballymac, as well as the Bridget Lean, the Dohertys, the Toomeys. They were, I suppose, the biggest rivals, and they were probably the best team that we saw and that we would have played against at club level.
What was the highlight of your playing career?
It's a bit of a cliche, I suppose, that what you win with your club, but I would definitely say maybe with Kerry. The first year we got to the All-Ireland was played in Croke Park. The previous year it was in Páirc Cliath, and they had used other probably neutral venues before then. But the first year the All-Ireland was played in Croke Park was a proud moment. And then on the field, I would definitely say our first county championship, as I say, we had been trying for years to beat that superb Castle Island ladies football team. And once we finally beat them in a county final, that was a great day for us. And then we won two All-Ireland Sevens titles as well the years that Kerry were knocked out of the championship. We, from Beaufort, we went off up to Kilmacud Crokes. They used to host the All-Ireland Seven-a-side competition, and we managed to win that 2 years in a row with a bare seven players through a combination of bad luck, injuries, illnesses. We ended up travelling with just seven players both years, and after a long day of great football, we just managed to win those. So I suppose winning those things with the club would definitely be a highlight for me.
What are some important qualities that managers and coaches look for in young players?
I'm always looking for skillful players. It's the first thing I'd look at, if people are good kickers and if they're team players. I remember at a coaching course I did when I was starting off, I heard Jack O'Connor giving a talk to young Kerry under 15 players, and was telling them about the different qualities, and he was mentioning things like discipline, talent, attitude, all that kind of thing, and he asked them to put them in order. And of course all the lads were saying talent and to be good at the skills was the most important thing, but Jack said no, attitude, discipline and talent, they are the things that he would look for in that order. And it brought home to the lads the importance of maybe the other qualities rather than just talent. But if I'm looking at primary school games now, I'm always looking for the skillful player who's a team player as well.
How did it feel the first time you put on the Kerry jersey on your debut?
How did I feel? I think I grew up, I suppose I attended primary school in Quilna, and I grew up listening to and watching the Lynch's, Paddy Lynch and Brendan Lynch on television, and watching the great Beaufort team of the 1980s under the stewardship of Jack McGrath, who was an absolute asset to Beaufort once he moved in. That Beaufort team were winning mid-Kerry championships, and they were backbone by the Coffees, the Hartnetts, like, and the Lynches, and they were just, I suppose I grew up in that environment. There were very few other sports even to watch, so it was, I mean, just where I grew up, I suppose it was a proud moment, all right, to get the first Kerry jersey.
A lot of lady footballers now go out to Australia to play in the AFL. Were you ever asked to go abroad?
I wasn't, Luke, and it wasn't available at the time. And to be honest, I'm not a great fan of the AFL at the moment. I see the benefit in giving players the opportunity to live as a professional sports person, I suppose, for a few years and to experience that. But to me, I see nothing attractive in the game. And every time I hear of players going out, I'm afraid that they'll pick up injuries. I just think it's very physical. And the skill level at the moment, it just, to me, it's not a very attractive game at the moment anyway. So, but no, to answer your question, I was never asked to go.
How has media coverage changed in ladies football since you retired, in regards to TG Cahir and Lidl being huge sponsors to the game?
The media coverage has been tremendous for ladies football. I mean, just even at local level, the print media as well as Radio Kerry, and Lidl's sponsorship for the National League and that, but TG Cahir's live coverage of the Championship, I think it has been huge, and it has been a game changer really in bringing the whole game to a wider audience, and people that wouldn't have realised how high the quality was, they're all able to watch it now, and the attendances are reflecting that.
Recently, GPA CEO Tom Parsons stated integration is, quote, the greatest opportunity in the history of Gaelic games. What are your opinions on this?
I think it will be very good for the LGFA and for the Camogie Association when it comes to pass. I think, unfortunately, funding is one of the obstacles at the moment. So the growth, I suppose, has come in the months. You have a lot of primary schools, you have a lot of ladies, a lot more ladies clubs now have set up in clubs. We are very lucky in Beaufort in that we had, I suppose, our chairman there, Frankie Coffey, a few years ago, he dedicated one dress room purely to ladies football, and it set up for the girls separate cubicles for the showers, and it's just fantastic. And in Beaufort we've always been treated equally, but it's not the same in other clubs. It's slow enough changing, and then again, availability of facilities is one of the problems there, because the more teams you have, the more facilities you need, and the less hours there are for everybody on the main pitch. So I think it's a bit further down the road at the moment than people think.
You are very involved in the Primary School Football League, which is underway at the moment. Can you please speak to us about this?
Yeah, I'm still involved in Cumann the Munster. I suppose when I started teaching, I was very lucky to get a job in Climbe, and the principal, Sean McGillicuddy at the time, he just had great interest, and he was a brilliant worker for the club, Climbe Glencairn as well. And Cumann the Munster, under the stewardship of Jerome Conway, I think, the Mid-Kerry board set up a primary schools competition, and it was played after Easter, every Friday night after Easter for 5 or 6 weeks, a league based on the number of teachers in the school. So there was a separate competition for 2 teachers, schools a separate for 3 teachers, etc. And Cumann the Munster then, Sean Kelly, when he was chairman in Kerry, decided to get Cumann the Munster going at county level, and he got a few, like he approached, I suppose, the right people, the Paddy Keane there from Dua, Morris O'Mahony from Ballydunahoo, Sean Sheehy was teaching in Firebook. He just got very good people in and said Cumann the Munster started it off slowly, but it's grown from strength to strength. We have competitions running at the moment. We're down to quarter final and semi final level at the moment in the county competitions, and they're all based on that actual original Mid-Kerry model. So we've competitions for 2-teacher schools, which is 7-a-side, 3 teachers, 9, and it goes all the way up to the urban schools, and there's almost 100% participation now by the primary schools in the county. We run the hurling competition later on in the year. The mini sevens is a competition as well, as 7-a-side, where every school can take part, and the girls' football, so there are equal opportunities for boys and girls between the hurling and the camogie and the ladies' football. And I just love being involved and watching the players. I saw a young one there from Onascall yesterday playing, and if she doesn't wear the Kerry jersey yet, I'll be very surprised. I love watching them. They get an opportunity to play in the primary game team, then the players once a year, the day of the Munster Championship, and even to watch those players progress and to see if they make it through to play for Kerry, whether to the Kerry lads or the Kerry girls at underage and then on to senior level. I just love being involved with Cumann the Munster. I think it has done wonderful work, and I think we have coordinators all over the county that are doing great work all together to promote it in their schools and in their districts.
Thank you very much for your time, Mary Jo.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, well done, Luke and Leisha there. What a fantastic interview with a living Gaelic football legend, and has poured so much back into the game as well. We're going to take a break, and after that we're going to be talking about invasive species of hornet and the effects they can have on our bees.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across the county. Serving the freshest seafood to Kerry families since 1963. Radio Kerry.
0667123666, there for us to take your calls, or you can text WhatsApp 083 300 3300. Now I'm going to hand you over to Hannah. And Hannah, you did a very interesting interview during the week.
Yes, we did. Hi, I'm Hannah. I'm from Castle Island Community College. Earlier in the week, Kate, Niamh and I, joined by Pat Curran, a local beekeeper from Clorglen, we talked to him about the invasive Asian hornet found in Belfast, and even more recently, two nests were found in Cork. We also spoke to him about how the hornets achieve their impact on, and how they could achieve their impact on the bees. Hi, Pat. I'm Hannah.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you.
Due to the newly discovered invasive Asian hornets and their aggressive feeding natures, how will this impact the bees?
It will have a dramatic effect on the bees. Absolute dramatic effect. Both on the bees and on the beekeepers. You see, in the bee world, the bees make honey for us and for themselves. They just build away, they make enough honey, they can't stop. Once the nectar out there, they can't stop working. They go out and they work and work and work and work until they die. In the other case, the wasp is, first of all, it's invasive, this wasp, and it feeds on, start off with green fly, and then they attack the hives.
Yes, sir.
And what they do is they kill the bees and they bring the bees back to feed the tiny larva. The tiny larva are meat eaters. And the wasp can't eat the food direct themselves. They have to put it through the tiny larva first. And the tiny larva, there's no nice way for saying this, they excrete a white, a clear liquid, and that's what the adults eat.
So they're very bad.
They put it through the larva first, and they have a sting. That's the bee sting is acid, and the other one is alkaline. So the beekeeper, if he gets stung by a wasp, has much more effect than a bee sting would have. And this new Asian hornet, the new arrival, has arrived in Cork. I actually have one. In alcohol, I got a present of one of them to be able to show students and beekeepers alike.
That's brilliant.
What to look like, what to look. And it's over 25 mil long, and it has red legs, red socks on it, and it's set to devastate the bee world.
Hi, Pat. Yeah. It's Niamh here. Why are bees important for our ecosystems, and what would we do without them?
Well, the famous Albert Einstein said many years ago, if the bees of the world were to die, mankind would not have more than 3 years at max. We are totally dependent on the bees for pollination for 90% of our food that we eat, directly or indirectly. For instance, they pollinate apples, but we can live without apples. But they pollinate a whole lot of other things, directly and indirectly, seed of all the vegetables, everything. If the bees are the ones to die out, mankind is fated. They cannot make it without the bees.
That's very good.
But a bee could make 300 apples in one flight, and there's up to 120 or 30,000 bees in a hive. So you can imagine what they can pollinate in one day alone.
That's incredible. Thank you, Pat.
And Pat, this is Kate. Do you yourself keep bees, and what's involved?
I do keep bees, yes. I'm a beekeeper since 1980s. And in 1980s, I inherited bees from an uncle of mine that was a beekeeper all his life. And I was shaking my shoes because I didn't know anything about bees. But I had to learn and do the courses. I went to the IT in Cork for 2 winters in a row, and then how to beekeeper. And I finished up teaching beekeeping. And in the last few years, I've been in 14 counties, actually, doing lectures, a series of lectures.
Oh, wow.
And amazing. I also put bees into a glass hive, and I take them around to the schools, the national schools, and even the preschools, and even some of the secondary schools. I bring the bees around and do a lecture and show them the live bees in the hive, inside the glass hive, where they can't get out, obviously enough. And the total fascination with the bee, with the live bees. And I got fascinated myself with them, and I work the whole time with them now.
Well, thank you very much, Pat, for such an interesting conversation about bees. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks so much, Pat. That was really, really interesting.
Thank you very much, Pat.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was lovely talking to you.
Okay, then.
Yeah, excellent interview there done by Hannah, Niamh and Kate with Pat Corn. We're going to take a break. We're going to have the news. And after that, we're going to be listening to an up-and-coming band, Out For One, from Listowel.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by the new family fish box at Quinlan's Seafood Bars. Packed with golden fish goujons, fresh squid, delicious prawns and tasty homemade chips. Order yours to take away today.
The Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Yeah, that's what you listen to, and we're into the second hour of a very special TY Transition Year Saturday Supplement in association with Learning Waves and Commission the Man. All this week we ran a radio course in Radio Kerry with these students, and today's programme is produced by them. And just got a text in. We were talking about the history and traditions of Halloween. As a child of the 40s and 50s, I've lovely memories of our thatched cottage before we got electricity, when we had an open fire that Mom had to do the baking and cooking on, and our light was from a kerosene lamp, Mom washing the clothes in a tin tub. Very happy childhood memories. Catherine Ahern, Ballylongford. That's well removed from our TY's, I'd say, upbringing. Now we have a very exciting segment to bring you. We have an up-and-coming Listowel band in studio. And I'm going to hand you over now to Niamh Kelly, Catherine DeLay and Myrne Donnelly. And first to you, Niamh.
Thanks very much, Joe. Welcome to our segment on the Saturday Supplement about Irish music. I'm Niamh from Pres Listowel.
I'm Myrne in Castle Island Community College.
I'm Catherine in Pres Milltown.
And we're here in studio with an up-and-coming teenage band from Listowel called Out For One. Now, lads, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself and telling us what roles you have in the band.
I'm George O'Donnell and I play the banjo.
I'm Jack Purcell and I play the accordion.
I'm Michael Harris and I sing and play the guitar.
Very good.
So tell me, when did you form the band?
I suppose at the start of summer we had an idea to form a band and we were going to do it for summer, and then Christy Walsh, who owns the bar in the stall, he asked us to play for the June races, and then we kind of just did it there and then.
Who would you say is your musical inspirations or influences?
Probably like Kingfisher or Ramble. We like to take their kind of music because it suits our instruments and songs.
Very good. And how did you come up with the name for the band?
We were in, I suppose, our first kind of proper gig in Ballyduff and Purcell's, and there was a load of people that said they'd pop out to see us for one, and it was a good crowd and everything, so we said we'd call it Out For One.
And is there any dream venue or festival you'd like to play?
I suppose even Kingfisher and Ambo, they were Mighty High, so I think Mighty Pies in Listowel, it's a bar in Listowel, and there's a big music venue there, like in Listowel, so I think that's probably where we'd like to be, maybe in the next couple of years.
Nice. What advice would you give to inspiring musicians?
Don't be shy, I think, just, you know, give it your all if you're going to give it your all, and don't be thinking the people to be thinking other of you, I don't know.
Keep at it as well, like, keep practicing when you're young.
And where do you usually play?
Practice, or when do you usually practice, or...
Yeah, where do you practice and then where do you play, like, your gigs?
Oh, Georgie, shit.
Yeah. And if you have any, like, gigs or nights, where do you play?
We haven't had too many gigs yet, but we've played in nice few places, in Tomashines in Lazelton, and in Jet O'Carroll's in Listowel, and...
We've won tonight now in Ballyduff.
What time is that on for people listening?
Time is it on, Jack?
Jack is the manager, is he?
10 is it?
Yeah, around 9, is it 10? I don't know, 9, 10 o'clock, come on.
His father's there, so. Oh.
Handy, I hope you make it on time for your father's sake.
Oh, yeah. And do you ever get nervous before you play?
At the start, I think, right, your first gig, but no.
Yeah,
no
more. Yeah. The more you play it, the more you get kind of used to it.
You get the crowd going too, do you know what I mean? You just can do whatever you want then, play away.
Do you think it's important to play music as, like, a young person, and why?
Yeah, I think it definitely is, because, like, if you play when you're young, you'll have it for the rest of your life, and yeah. it's something that you'll have into your old age as well. You won't just like it's sport and stuff. You'll kind of stop, but you won't stop that.
Well, thanks very much, boys, and we'll let you hear from Out for One for Yourselves playing "Ordinary Man" by Christy Moore.
I'm an ordinary man, nothing special, nothing. I have to make my way. Oh, well, I never asked for a lot. I was happy with what I got.
Excellent, excellent. Out for One. You're playing tonight. Where are you playing again?
Purcell's Bar.
Purcell's Bar, around after 9 o'clock there, you can make a way. Where's Purcell's Bar again?
Ballyduff.
Ballyduff, very good. Before I leave you go, do you write your own stuff or have you aspirations of doing it?
Aspirations, I think, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Sometimes during free classes in school, I'd throw on a few lyrics like.
Excellent. What years are you all in?
Myself and him are in 6th year.
Okay. And I'm in TY.
TY, oh, very good. Well, you're absolutely excellent lads, very talented altogether, and it's wonderful to blend the traditional with the new as well. It's absolutely excellent, and we wish you all the best. And a great interview done here by your TY students as well. So Out for One, watch this space, they're going places. We're going to take a break, and we'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Enjoy a simple, healthy and easy dinner solution with Quinlan's fresh, ready-made seafood meals, available in-store.
Yes, that's what you listen to. A very special Saturday Supplement. All this week, transition your students from around the county. We're in with us learning all aspects of radio, and it's an association with Learning Waves, Commissioner Man, and of course, Radio Kerry. And now, joining us again, we have Cathal Shea and Jennifer. And we mentioned Vox Pops, where we go out and get people's opinion on different subject matters. And Jennifer, you did another Vox Pop during the week.
Yes, so over the past week, myself and all the TY students went into the streets of Kerry to ask the locals about their views on antisocial behaviour, and these are some of the answers we received.
Do you think antisocial behaviour is getting more like big?
Common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
definitely.
Why do you think that?
Right, let's put it this way. Our lovely president that's going in is going to get €6,000 a week. You know, wages. And then you get people, ordinary everyday people, trying to survive on, €200 a week or social welfare. We've no housing, by all accounts. Yet, in my village alone, there's 18 houses vacant. Right, because they're derelict, you know, in a little district. And, like, they should be taken over if they can find out who owns them. I think it's a combination of a whole heap of stuff. It's not any particular one thing. So, you know, it's just the way the society is at the moment, really.
Have you seen any antisocial behaviour?
Not really, no. I mean, most people I know from different parts of the world living where I am seem to get on great, and everybody gets on with everybody. But it really depends, I guess, on the environment you're in. You know, if you're in a city or a large town, it might be very different. And I'm not too sure what's fueling it, but I think there's a combination of a whole heap of stuff involved in that.
And do you think there's now, especially, or do you think there's more of an issue, like in the past times, with an issue with youth crime, especially around Halloween time?
Well, I dislike that aspect of it, all right. But still, you know, the majority will behave very well. And it's really, for children, it's so important. And they love going around to the house and that. And it just takes a small minority to change the whole thing. And, you know, that's the bad news we hear. We don't hear the good news.
I think, like, I'm 24. I think maybe kids that are 7 or 8 years younger than me, they seem to be more brazen with stuff, and there's less, like, there's a lack of manners.
And do you think there's a problem with antisocial behaviour with the youth kind of around Halloween time as well?
Not where we live, no, not out in the country.
And do you think it's gotten better, like, than it used to be? Do you think Halloween has gotten safer for the youth?
I think they don't realise, you know, what they're having fun, like, I don't mind that. But I'd say they don't realise, you know, how they might frighten maybe elderly or younger children, you know.
Yeah, and to speak more on this issue, the students have organised an expert in the field. So I'm going to hand you over now to Jennifer Shea and first Cahill.
Good morning. My name is Cahill. I'm also joined in studio by my fellow classmates, Jennifer and Shea. Today on the line, we will be talking to a community guard, Aidan O'Mahony. He will be talking to us about crime in youth and in the communities. Good morning, Aidan.
Good morning, Cahill.
So, Aidan, do you think that crime in the youth and communities are rising in numbers?
I suppose that's a good question. I suppose every place is different, and I suppose I can only speak of... I'm a community-based guardie in Tralee. I'm attached to community policing. I think the level in underage crime, I wouldn't say it's rising. I think the Gardaí, we try to do a lot of work along with JLOs, along with social workers, along with TUSLA, I suppose, to prevent crime. I suppose no different teachers in the school. We're trying to keep them involved in education. And I suppose a lot of part of my job is working with the primary schools and working with the secondary schools in initiatives and trying to meet these, I suppose, underage people that, you know, might tend to get involved in crime and try to work with them to try to get them to, I suppose, stay away from crime more than anything.
Yeah, brilliant.
So what does your job entail when you go around to the different communities?
So I suppose the good thing about community policing, I've been involved with community policing in Tralee with nearly 11 years. I suppose there's massive variety in our job. The one thing, I suppose, when you join the guard, you start off in the regular unit, and after a couple of years, if you're lucky enough, you can branch into different units. I suppose yesterday we actually had a TY day in the Garda station in Tralee where we had over 20 students, and they got to see, I suppose, the different groups or the different dynamics of Garda Síochána, from the detective unit, collective service unit, the drugs unit, community policing. And getting back to community policing, our job basically is we do a lot of work with the communities. I suppose the old model of policing was being involved in the communities. The Gardaí were always known by the communities, and I think that's, I suppose, our biggest thing is that our phone is always on and that we're contactable by people, and then we deal with the schools, we deal with the primary schools, we deal with the secondary schools around Halloween, around Christmas time. So I suppose you're kind of putting a face to the guard, and that's someone that the people can trust in as well.
What is something the guards are trying to do to stop underage crime?
I suppose, look, it's no different to any crime. It's not just underage in terms of, like, there's always I suppose, incentives by the Gardaí to carry out, I suppose, specific duties to, I suppose, number one, to be seen. I think the biggest thing for Garda Síochána is that you're always seen by the public. I suppose that's the best deterrent of anything. I suppose numbers maybe at the moment aren't very high in Garda Síochána, but the biggest thing they are doing to deter crime is they're trying to enroll more and more people. You know, there's more and more people entering Templemore. The job is being publicised more, so I think if we get more numbers, then it'll be a deterrent against crime.
And do you think that the numbers in Garda Síochána will rise in the future?
I think it will. I think they're making the job more appealing. You know, I think a lot of people still have a lot of interest in Garda Síochána. I think the age has risen now to, I think it's 50, which makes it open to a lot more people as well. The height restriction is gone, so I think that opens doors to more and more people to join the job.
Well, thanks very much, Aidan, for coming on and talking to us this morning. Much appreciated.
You're more than welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, lots of food for thought there. And thanks again to Aidan O'Mahony and Cahill. Shay and Jennifer did that interview. Just to get to another few texts. Good morning, Joe. Fantastic programme. Brilliant students. Hi, Joe. Enjoying the programme this morning. Well done to the young people involved in it. And we have two more TUI students, bleary-eyed looking here this morning because they've had no sleep whatsoever through the night. And we're joined by Niamh Howden and Kate McMahon from Intermediate School Clarnagan. Tell me why you've had no sleep through the night.
So last night we spent the night on the hockey pitch to raise money for Focus Ireland, and it gave us a chance to kind of feel what homelessness was like for other people. You know, the cold, the sounds, the light. You know, it was very hard to get any sleep on the hockey pitch.
Yeah, it was a rough night last night as well.
Yeah, it was kind of drizzly throughout the night and it was quite windy as well, so some people were running after their pillows and stuff like that, but yeah, it was a good experience overall.
Yeah, and what had you, sleeping bags, is it?
Sleeping bags and yoga mats and everything like that, yeah.
Yeah, Kate, was it, I suppose enjoyable is the wrong word, but how did you find the experience?
Yeah, it was a great experience. I suppose everyone got to communicate with one another. It was one of our first events in TY. And I suppose we just learned what it was like to endure those harsh conditions and get an insight as to how, you know, what all these people, all homeless people are going through right now.
Mm.
And yeah.
One night would be enough of it, I'd say.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And were you on your screens or were you able to...
They discouraged screens, yeah, really, just to kind of bring it more to life.
Yeah.
So we were able to chat amongst ourselves and stuff. But we stayed up late to understand that, you know, homeless people can't go to sleep until late because there's a lot of people around and stuff.
Yeah.
But it was a really interesting experience and I'm very glad I was a part of it.
Yeah, and it was in aid of Focus Ireland and you raised some important funds as well.
Yeah, we had a goal to raise over €1,500 for Focus Ireland and we reached that goal, so we're very happy with ourselves.
Mm. That's the beauty of TY, you know, it's allows you to kind of do different things that you wouldn't normally do, so I'd imagine it's a great start to it, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
It's excellent. It's definitely a core memory for me anyway. I'll always remember the night I slept at school.
Yeah, because it's one thing it being described to you or whatever. And now not all homelessness is sleeping rough in streets. It's, you know, people sleeping in hotels and not having accommodation and things like that. But I suppose it gives you a renewed appreciation for the whole thing.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah,
brilliant. You're enjoying this week, are you, inside here so far?
Yeah, I'm having a great time. I'm loving it.
Yeah, we've learned a lot.
Yeah.
It's important to know how to deal with, you know, to know how the media works and to deal with the public, especially doing Vox Pops and all that.
Yeah. Shay and Jennifer, how are you finding it, Jennifer, yourself?
Yeah, it's been so good, like just getting a better understanding of what goes on like behind the scenes. You don't realise how much work goes in when you're sitting at home listening to it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Shay, yourself?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I felt I learned a lot about the media in the past week.
Yeah.
It feels like it'd be something I'd use now.
Mm. And even, you know, organising interviews, and interviews drop off and you have to replace them with other people. And this week I thought was very kind of dynamic like that. It kept changing all the time, even right up to yesterday evening or yesterday. So it was great that you were able to do that. And the professional interview you did there with Aidan O'Mahony was absolutely excellent. So you should be commended on that. We're going to hear more from you later on, but we are going to go to another break. And after that, we're going to be talking about the Junior Search cycle and the changes that have taken place there in the last year or two, and how they've impacted TY students.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Take the fear out of fish and chat to our fishmongers about how to add delicious, easy to cook seafood into your menu. Oven and air fryer ready meals available.
0667123666 for your calls. Dervla's taking them. You can text the WhatsApp 083 300 3300. And Niamh and Kate are still with me in studio, and they're joined by Conal now. And we were saying you can donate still to the Focus Ireland, so you can go on their website, is it, Niamh?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so you can go on there and there's a donate link and all that. Now, the Junior Search cycle, this is what we're going to discuss now. So I'm going to hand you back to Kate, Conal, and firstly, Niamh.
In June 2025, there was a change in the junior cycle grading system, which resulted in an overall influx of distinctions and higher merits for junior cycle students all around the country.
First up, we have a very special guest. She first proposed these new changes and is the past Minister for Education. Ladies and gentlemen, Norma Foley.
Hi, Minister. Thank you very much for talking with us today.
I'm really pleased to have the opportunity to chat with you, and congratulations on your work experience. I think it's fantastic that you get the opportunity from, a radio point of view to learn the trade, as it were. And it's a great, great opportunity. So huge thanks also to Radio Kerry for providing the opportunity. I'm speaking to you today actually from the North-South Ministerial Council gathering, which is in Farmley here in Dublin. And it's an opportunity for us to share and meet with our counterparts from Northern Ireland and share best practice north and south. So it's all about learning. So whilst you're learning from a radio point of view, I'm also learning and sharing best practice with my northern counterparts.
Thank you very much. So firstly, why do you think that there was a need to change the Junior Cert grading system?
Yeah, I think it's been a great innovation. In the first instance, I suppose we put a lot of work into changing, as it were, the examination at senior cycle and what that might look like. And I did a lot of work myself as Minister for Education in relation to that, to ensure that, you know, no student would feel that they have 100% of their success dependent on how they perform in one moment in June. So now students at senior cycle will have an opportunity to have a good percentage of their exam taken before they take the exams in June, and also that they will have an opportunity to show their variety of skill sets. So there will be things like interviews or practical experiments or whatever the case might be. So we have that underway, and I also think then, next step is to take that look at junior cycle and to give an opportunity for students really to shine at their very best. And the work around the grade bands and the top four grade bands being more evenly distributed, I think that's really, really positive. It does allow students to, as I say, showcase their talents and abilities more evenly.
This is Conal here. So my question for you is, was it a difficult process to implement, and what did it kind of involve to get it underway?
Yeah, I think any process that brings about change can be challenging, it can be difficult, but that doesn't mean to say that you shouldn't do it. So it does involve engagement, it involves, looking at the processes here in Ireland, looking across the world as well and seeing where there are examples of best practice, and engaging with what they call the stakeholders or the partners in education, and that's whether it's reform at senior cycle or indeed at the junior cycle element of things. But I've always been a believer myself in education, coming from an education background. We cannot afford to stand still. There's always opportunities to do more and more, and consistently look afresh at, existing procedures and examinations in this case, to see, can we do more and more that does more for the student and puts the student at the centre of it. And so, for example, the changing of the bands here, I do believe that's more student friendly. I do believe it builds more confidence for students and that they see more of a reward for their work. So I suppose the bottom line is not being afraid to to change, not being afraid to look at things and say, are there new opportunities to do things differently or to do things better?
Minister, this is Kate here. What impact do you think that this change has had on the junior cert students across the country?
Yeah, thanks very much, Kate. I think it's just as I've said, really. I think it will build confidence of students. I think they will feel that they are more rewarded for their work. And at the end of the day, I don't think any exam should be there to catch a student out. At the very least, it should be there to allow students to showcase their work, to showcase their talent and to showcase their commitment. And I think the work here in terms of the grade bands will do that more and more. And it doesn't mean to say that that's it, full stop now. I think we continue to look at all aspects of education, and in this instance, all aspects of the examination, both at senior cycle and at junior cycle, to ensure that the student is always centre to all that we seek to achieve in education.
Thank you. And Minister, the free school book scheme, that has been brought in the last year or two. Has that been a success?
I think that's been a great success, and I'm very proud of the fact that I was the minister that introduced that. You know, as I said previously, I come from an education background. It's been probably one of the greatest privileges of my life to be a teacher in the classroom. But I always felt in education we need to do as much as we can to ensure that there's equality of opportunity. So I think it's only right that every child and every student has the opportunity to receive the free books. So we're all in an equal level in the classroom, equally things like hot school meals and all of that, and more work to be done there too. So I think parents are very appreciative of the free school book scheme. I think students are very appreciative of it, and it does level the playing pitch all the more.
Thanks very much for coming and talking to us about this today. We really appreciate it.
Not at all. I'm absolutely thrilled. It's a joy always to speak with students, and a huge thank you to Joe as well for facilitating it. I've got to say, I think transition year is a wonderful, wonderful year for students. It also gives you an opportunity to showcase your talents and to learn new things. And a particular thank you to Radio Kerry. I think they've been fantastic in facilitating this opportunity for you. So thanks very much indeed. Appreciate it.
Earlier this week, Niamh and I travelled to our school in Killorglin to hear our own school community's opinions on this new change. Firstly, we interviewed Mr O'Shea.
I'm Micheál O'Shea, and I'm an Irish teacher in the intermediate school, Killorglin.
Mr O'Shea, did you welcome the new grading system change this year, or did you find it quite difficult to bring into school?
Oh, I welcomed it as it broadened the range of marks from which people could get distinctions. I felt it was a bit too narrow before, so yeah, it was a welcome change.
And did you think that change was helpful to other students? Did you feel like they felt more accomplished once they got their results and they were happier with that?
Yeah, I think it brought more people into the range of where they were getting distinctions. It was extremely difficult for people to get distinctions, and we've found over the years that students were getting a bit disheartened, you know, working really hard and not getting the distinction that they felt that they deserved.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much for your time today.
We then interviewed the principal of the ISK, Mr O'Dwyer, to hear his views on the new changes.
I'm Niamh Howden, a student in the Intermediate School in Killorglin.
I'm Kate McMahon, and I'm also a student in the Intermediate School in Killorglin.
I'm Joe O'Dwyer, and the principal of the Intermediate School in Killorglin.
So, Mr O'Dwyer, was this new grading system a welcome to the school?
Yes, it was. It was very welcome to the school because students didn't feel that they were achieving as much from in the old system as they are in the new system.
Did you feel the old marking scheme was harsher and fair? And by making these adjustments, did you feel like they solved that problem?
Well, the old system was harsher and a little unfair, I think, in my personal opinion. And this system seems to have addressed those concerns. So we're very happy about it.
Have you found teachers facing new challenges when adapting to this new grading system?
No, not particularly. Like, teachers overcome those challenges, and actually it's a new grading system, but it's going back to what was there beforehand, so teachers are very familiar with it.
Do you think it motivates students to partake more in classes and homework, knowing that higher grades are more achievable now?
I would hope that it is motivating students, but I know homework is not a particularly fun thing for anybody to have to do, so, but hopefully it is. Thank you.
We then interviewed our good friend and schoolmate Zoe, who did her junior cert in 2024 before this new grading system came into action, to hear her opinion on this change.
Hi, I'm Niamh Howden. I'm a student in the Intermediate School Killorglin. Today with me I have...
Kate McMahon. I'm also a student in the Intermediate School Killorglin.
And we're interviewing...
Zoe Conway. I'm a student in the Intermediate School Killorglin. I did my junior cert in 2024.
So, Zoe, how do you feel that these new changes have been brought in this year? How do you feel that... Would you prefer it to have been brought in last year or...
Of course, I'd have liked them to be brought in for my junior cert because then the marking would have been easier. But I think it is a good time to bring it in because the course is evolving and it kind of helps students to know that the gap in the merit and higher merit isn't as large.
Very good. And you're glad that they're brought in now and you're happy enough that... Well, I suppose you're always a bit disappointed that they weren't brought in the year before you, you know, but... You're glad enough now that they've been brought in now and you think it's fair for all the other students who are sitting their junior cycle this year that you think it's a good change that's happening?
Yeah, I think it's good. Obviously, I would have liked it to be for me, but I think it is beneficial to all the students to bring it in now.
And Zoe, from your experience with the old grading system, the junior cert, how did you find it and did you think it was fair?
I did think it was fair to a certain point, but I do think that the gap in the between the merit and higher merit was a lot bigger, so students who scored in the higher merit, the higher level of the merits, maybe didn't get a higher merit, so it is a little unfair.
Okay, that's perfect. Thank you very much for your time today.
Our final interview was done with a TY student at Presentation Tralee. She earned herself an amazing 6 distinctions. This is April Kennedy. What are your thoughts on the new marking scheme for the junior cert?
I think they're really good, to be honest. I think it makes it much easier to get higher results, and I think it's just a good improvement on the whole marking scheme.
Do you think they've maybe made it like too easy, or?
No, I think it's just about like reachable, but also makes it still worthy of like distinction.
And do you think that maybe like after they lowered the marking scheme for this, making it easier to get higher marks, that maybe going into the leaving cert that'll give you like higher expectations, or what do you think about that?
I think it definitely makes you raise your work ethic, makes you work harder.
April Kennedy there giving her final thoughts. And in studio we still have Niamh, Kate and Connell. What do you think yourselves, Kate, the changes? Good thing, bad thing?
Oh, I think it's a good thing. Before, the distinctions were really hard to achieve, and I feel like bringing down that bracket gives us more a better opportunity of achieving our best.
Yeah, Niamh?
Definitely. I think the fact that they've made the gap smaller now, it's much, much better, and I was delighted to have it.
Yeah, excellent. Connell?
I think it's great. You know, I think making it easier to get distinction would definitely make people work harder because it is more achievable. It's like, they have hope that like they could definitely get one.
Yeah, so there seems to be a lot of positivity about it. That's what comes across from that item. Well done. Sandra Griffin gets in touch. Great show, Joe. Such inspiring and lovely young people. Lovely programme. You must be very proud of the students, Joe. And that comes in from Eileen. I am very proud, so proud, because we have a great bunch in with us all week and they're doing a fantastic job. And speaking of a great bunch, we're going to get them all into studio after the break to find out what they thought of this radio racket and how did they enjoy the experience and how they found producing the programme today. We'll take a break with more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Supplement your diet with a healthy and fresh dinner option. Fresh seafood from Quinlan.
Yeah, and next Saturday, there's a very special Saturday Supplement with Frank Lewis. It's every day since he came back to Clarny as a priest in 1979, 46 years ago. Bill Murphy marvels as he looks down on Loch Lane and prays the same office as the monks on Inishfallen did 1,000 years ago. It is Bishop Bill Murphy's favourite places to go to. Bishop Bill Murphy talks to Frank Lewis and he takes him to his 8 of his special places on Radio Kerry on October 25th. And so it's a very special programme next Saturday from 9 a.m, the last Saturday of the month. Lots of messages getting in touch in relation to our TY students that have been in this week with us, learning all aspects of radio. Good morning, Joe. A fantastic programme this morning with the TY students. Fantastic show, everyone. Great opportunity for the TYs. And that comes in from Geraldine O'Shea. Yeah, and it's great. And I often say this, but I did my TY experience in Radio Kerry in 1997. Would you believe that? That's before all of you were born, is it? I think it is. Yeah. So the TY students are all in with me in studio, and we're going to find out now how the week went for everyone. Tig, if you could move into that microphone. There's 14 students in here now, so we're trying to squeeze everyone in. Tig, tell us the name of the school first.
I'm from Gael Colossia, Rockran.
And how did you find the week?
I found the week very good.
Yeah. Would you like a career in it? In media?
I would like a career in media.
Yeah. What was your favourite part of the week?
My favourite part of the week was doing the Vox boxes on the street.
Yeah. And Elaine Kinsler was down talking to you during the week, and she was like, that's one of the more difficult aspects of radio, and that if you're able to do that, you're able to do anything. And you all did it so well. So that's brilliant. Shay, tell us the school you're from.
I go to Presentation Milltown.
Yeah. And how did you find the week?
I found the week very good. I felt like I learned a lot about media over the past few weeks.
Yeah. And that's something, I suppose, you know, the hands-on aspect of this is you're just listening to, say, presenters on air, but you don't realise the work that goes in, I'd say, behind it all, do you?
No, you don't.
Yeah. What interviews did you do during the week?
During the week, we did an interview with Community Guard Aidan Mahoney and Kerry FC PRO Ivan Hurley.
Yeah, and you did that live, which was absolutely brilliant. Niamh, tell us the school you're from first.
I'm from Presentation Listowel.
Very good. And how did you find the week?
I thought it was so good. I didn't realise how much I was going to learn and like how hands-on it was going to be. I thought we were going to be making cups of tea and coffee and drawing in CDs and stuff to the presenters, but we actually got to do, like, it was such a hands-on experience and we got to learn so much. Like, I'm so happy I came.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for my skinny latte. I ordered it on Tuesday. But do you think this is something you'd like to do in the future?
Oh, absolutely. Like, yeah. I knew I wanted to do something in media, but like, this has just confirmed it. Like, it's just been so much fun, and I just love like presenting so far and stuff, and I'd like to go more into it and try different aspects of it.
Yeah. And like the opportunities, there isn't many opportunities like this where you get a full week producing a programme, and actually this is not fake radio. We're actually on live here across the county this morning.
Yeah, I think it's so good, and it's like we're not in college or anything, so unless we were actually going to college for a radio, like a degree in like radio and media, like we wouldn't get an opportunity like this any other time. So that's what TY is about, and it's like it's just so good for us to be offered this kind of experience.
Yeah, excellent. You did a great job during the week, Niamh, so well done. Hannah, tell us the school you're from and how you found the week.
I'm from Castle Island Community College, and I thought the week was just brilliant as well. Yeah, yeah. I really thoroughly enjoyed it.
Mm. Would you like a career in media, or do you think it'd stand to any career you'd go at? Or?
Yeah, I'm just so indecisive at what career I go with. But like, I think that this was just so brilliant for me to do, because like, I would definitely really consider it as a career option. Like, I really enjoyed the week. I thought it was just so interesting learning about radio and like all its ins and outs, and like how much work goes into production. I was just like, you really don't realise it when you're sitting at home. It's just, yeah, it's just so great.
Yeah, and that's quite all right to not know what you're going to be doing now, lads, because I know when I was in your shoes, I didn't know what I was going to go at. Like, I did mention I did radio, but I went a long roundabout way till I got back to radio. And my other week, I was in Jessica Harrington's riding stables. I wanted to become a jockey, so it went completely different. So I think all experiences are good, and you'll learn from all of them, which is brilliant. Jennifer, tell us the school you're in.
I'm from St. Bridget Secondary School in Killarney.
Yeah. And how did you find the week?
I thought it was great, yeah. Like, I'd 100% recommend it if you're in TY. And, like, even if you're not thinking about doing media, like, it teaches you so much about how to, like, speak in front of a microphone or even in front of people. It's just so good for that kind of a thing.
Yeah. Do you think your confidence grew a bit?
Yeah, I'd say 100%. Like, just sitting here even now, it's like you feel so much more confident than you did at the start of the week.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, I mentioned the start of the week, I always say that's so quiet on the Monday, and then Friday it's not very quiet anymore. Catherine?
Hello.
What school are you in?
I'm from Presentation Milltown.
Yeah, and how did you find the week?
I found it really good. I really enjoyed it. Like, we learned a lot.
Mm-hmm. What was your favourite part?
I think my favourite part, I really enjoyed this morning getting to, like, interview people and, like, on live. And I enjoyed the Vox Box as well, and, like, they were really fun.
Yeah. Was there a bit of a buzz to being on live radio.
Yeah, and like you, like at the start, even when we were like testing out our voices and stuff, like even that was scary and wasn't on live. And now like we're on live and like people are hearing us and like it's so, we have so much more confidence.
Yeah,
as Jennifer was saying.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, the transformation, because what we do on the Monday, we get you all to record your voices and to listen to them.
Yeah.
And because that can be a bit freaking out. And to think then, by Saturday, you're live on air interviewing people. It's an amazing transformation. Yeah, excellent. Myrne, tell us the school you're in.
I'm in Castle Island Community College.
And how did you find the week?
I thought it was really eye-opening. I didn't realise what happened behind the scenes, but yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, and would you like a career in it, or did it kind of...
I think I would, yeah, it definitely helped.
Yeah.
It was very interesting.
Yeah, you did a great job with the band that time, lads. It was absolutely brilliant. And they can say now their first radio interview ever was with yourselves when they go on to be rich and famous. Luke, tell us how you found the week. What school are you in?
I'm in Presentation Milltown.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the week. I learned a lot about the background in media, and I'd love to work in radio.
Excellent. So it's kind of definitely whetted the appetite.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And Michael, then, tell us yourself, how did you find the week? What school are you from first, Michael?
I'm St. Brendan's in Killarney, the same.
Excellent. And how did you find the week?
Well, I suppose as I want to go down to a career in media, it gives you kind of a deep dive into it, and the programme is so diverse now. Obviously, Radio Kerry have developed it in partnership with Learning Waves, and it just gives you a taster almost.
Yeah. You were excellent in the sports interview. I thought you were brilliant, and you have a great voice, Michael, as well. So I think you have a career if you want it, so keep at it, and well done, because coming in here as well is the first step on that as well. I know you have media experience.
And
before,
the unpredictability of live radio as well.
it comes out there. And, you know, speaking of the unpredictability of radio, a very special birdie told me you had a very special birthday during the week. You celebrated. So can you say the age, or do you want to keep it a secret?
I think everyone will know I'm the big 18 on Thursday.
Give him a big round of applause. Well done. Happy birthday, Michael. Leisha, tell us the school you're in.
I'm from Mercymount
Hawk. Mercymount Hawk. And how did you find the week?
It was very fun and interesting. I loved it.
Yeah, excellent. Would you like it as a career, do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah?
It'd be definitely an option.
Brilliant. What was your favourite part of the week?
I loved interviewing people. Like, it was really fun learning new things from them.
Yeah, excellent. Connell, yourself, the school you're from?
I'm from Gaelcastacuri.
And how did you find the week?
Yeah, it was great, you know, it was really enjoyable. Like, I kind of got pushed out of my comfort zone a bit with, like, the Vox Pops, you know, like, going up talking to people on the street is, like, kind of a hard thing to do, but I'm glad I, like, got that done, you know?
Yeah, excellent, Colin. You're dead right. It does push you out of your comfort zone, but that can be a good thing as well. And you showed a great attitude, all of you, which I thought was exemplary. Niamh, the other Niamh, Niamh H and Niamh K. We have Niamh H, Niamh Howden. How did you find it overall?
I absolutely loved it. Yeah, I thought it was a brilliant experience. From someone who'd never considered media before, yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, and do you think it's something you would consider now?
Absolutely, yeah. I didn't realise the effort and the work that was put in behind the scenes, and now that I've been here and been able to do that, I absolutely love it, yeah.
Yeah, excellent. And finally, Kate?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this week. I thought that it was a great experience to learn how to deal with people and, you know, ask questions that you never thought you'd ask before.
An eventful week. You were on radio, you produced a programme, and you were sleepy out for Focus Ireland as well. So that's what TY can do.
Yeah, no, it's a really amazing year. I knew, before I was getting into it, I knew that we'd be doing all these activities, but it's way more fun.
Excellent. Well, you know, we're always conscious of time, aren't we? And I think I have about 20 seconds. Hello, Radio Kerry. Thank you from Presentation Secondary School Listowel for providing this phenomenal opportunity to transition your students in our county, developing their career awareness and media skills. Gaurav Mila Ma Agut Galair. And good morning, Joe. Excellent programme. Award winning all round. Best wishes to the musicians. You did it proud. And that comes in from Agnes. You did an absolutely fantastic job. Well done. You were brilliant from start to finish. And like I said, it's amazing the transformation from Monday right through. I want to reiterate that I think your school should be very proud of you and your family should be very proud of you as well. And I think you deserve a bull bus. Give yourself a bull bus. That's all we have time for on the programme. And this was an association with Learning Waves and Kamishoon Naman. Francis is on the way. He's live from the Rose Hotel for the Dan Horn Health Expo. My thanks to Abigail Bernard, who was on sound. Fiona Stack produced. And Frank Lewis will be back again next Saturday from 9 a.m. And I'll follow the following Saturday. So we'll finish out with a big round of applause. Well done, TY.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Because at least one day of the weekend should involve someone else doing all the cooking. Order your delicious takeaway from Quinlan's today.